welcome to the AVOD. I'm Count Vargelon.
I'm DM.
And we're joined today by our very special guest.
I'm Billy Batson. I'm here to talk about Captain Marvel.
Wrong Captain Marvel, Billy. But we'll see you back here in a couple of weeks.
Oh, sorry.
Groundbreaker. Hi. How are you guys?
That was beautiful.
I've missed you.
We've missed
it's
you
been
too.
A while.
That's entirely 100% me because I got too busy around Christmas to go see Aquaman. Mm-hmm. And that's 100% my fault. If I had just gone to see Aquaman, we would have done one of these over Christmas. But for the rest of the year, I think we're going to be seeing you all the time because it's like movie after movie after movie yeah. all year.
Right?
Oh my God.
Oh, Lord.
So many high profile movies this year.
I can't wait. I've got my calendar booked.
There's a new Spider-Man movie. There's a new Avengers movie. And, for briefly, people whined that they're like, how could you reveal the idea, the new Spider-Man trailer before we knew if Spider-Man survives in Avengers?
Yeah.
I'm like, shut up.
Come on.
Shut up.
Anyone who glances into the future Marvel catalog that they, or the calendar that they have, knows that there's at least like 5 sequels to each and every one of their major characters coming up.
I know, so, right?
It is of no shock to anyone.
Anyway, well, you know what? We'll get there when we talk about Avengers, I assume. But right now, we got some random crap to start the show off with. I want to recommend a TV show. Have either of you seen Black Monday?
No.
A movie?
No, brand new TV show.
Oh, no. New?
It's Don Cheadle's new show.
Oh, yes, Wall Street and,
yeah,
oh,
Wall
yes.
Wall Street,
yes.
the 80s, around yes. the Black
God,
Monday,
that looks good.
October. It's so much fun. It's so good. I want to recommend it to everybody. It's the guy who created Happy Endings, the
okay.
beloved, yep. and, you know, we still miss it, sitcom Happy Endings. He created this, too. And, oh, my God, it's so funny. Don Cheadle is amazing, as always. Like, it's really funny, and it does great drama as well. There's, like, 2 or 3 episodes in the 7 I've watched where they're like, I think they forgot to be a comedy this week, but it's still really good because the character stuff is that great. So yeah,
wow.
I can't recommend it strongly enough. It's a great show, but I want to specifically call out an amazing thing. So it's set in the 80s. It's not about real people. It's not about a real, trading organization. It's about one of the many scummy trading groups in the 1980s. In one episode, the guy, they've changed his name, but the guy who wrote Wall Street drops by to like shadow the people for a day. So like they do nods like that, and there's lots of, you know, cute self-aware nods to the 80s. But by far the best thing they've done in that respect is figuring out a way to not get sued in the most arrogant way possible. So they want to talk about Michael Milken and his predator's balls and the way he got all these rich people to have debauched parties, and he would set up, you know, scummy deals that he was at the center of. Every year. Like, it was a huge thing that he did. And he went to jail for all of this stuff, so everyone knows he's a scumbag. But I think they were still worried he might be sued, because he is also now a philanthropist who cares about his image. So they had the best way I've ever seen of avoiding being sued. And that is, they called the character not Michael Milken. Every single time someone greets him, you're not Michael Milken. I'm not Michael Milken. This is not the Predator's ball. And that is the only work they did.
That's great.
It's so good. And it's like, yep, we're not putting any work in here. This is not the Predator's ball. I'm not Michael Milken. Let's get to it. Oh no, but that is like representative of the kind of comedy. Like it's over the top. It's weird. It's fun. Paul Scheer is one of the main characters.
Yes, with hair.
I know, with crazy, like with a crazy 80s wig. I'm like, yeah, way to go, Paul Scheer. But yeah,
nice.
Doing the drama great, doing the comedy great. It's hitting all fronts. Can't say enough good things about it. I recommend everybody check it out. In Canada, it's on Crave. It's on Showtime in America. I don't know what Showtime's online affiliations are in the States, but they even go so far as to open every episode with the 1987, like, Showtime logo.
Wow.
Just to make sure people get it on board right away. So yeah, Black Monday, it's fantastic.
So noted. Yeah, I definitely wanted to check that one out.
You definitely should. Oh, and the episodes are only half an hour. It is sitcom length, even though it's half a drama.
Awesome.
All right. I believe DM has a thing.
Yeah, I thought I was waiting for you to say it.
I did. I said next up.
Oh, no, I didn't hear that at all.
Totally fine. Go for it.
So I finally got around to watching Tomb Raider.
Oh. Mm-hmm. How'd you like it?
And it's not great.
It's not, no.
It wastes a lot of time at the start.
It takes so long to get started.
And then
that's the weirdest thing about that movie.
It's like, okay, I guess I'll open the tomb now. It's like, okay, I go, all right, I guess we're ready for that to happen. And then it's just Last Crusade for a little while. And
it Last Crusades, and then it just immediately stops.
And then that's the end of the movie. And it's like, what was the point of all of that?
It takes so long for her to get to that island. And then when she gets to the island, she spends, like, charitably 20 minutes hanging out with Walton Goggins and the various slaves, and then right away she runs into her dad without too much effort.
Yeah.
Like, huh. I feel like they've structured this movie really badly.
They did. And do you know what? That's exactly what happened.
Yeah, it just felt so formulaic. I mean,
oh,
just,
God, is it ever.
You know, it just hit all the beats. I mean, you could use that protractor to just, you know, figure out where it's going to go next, you know?
Yeah, and it's just,
they
copied stuff directly from the game. So it's like, why not just put the game on screen? Because the game's great. It's a good story. Just show us that.
Yeah, and I actually really liked the plot of the game.
Yeah.
Because the plot of the game was there are these guys and there's a tomb of an ancient empress who creates storms. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then what is it? And then there actually seem, when you get there, there's no like twist. There is a giant massive cult with crazy samurais. Oh, and the skeleton seems to actually have magical powers and does try to possess a lady. Like, that's interesting. Yeah. What is this? They literally just do Uncharted.
But not even, they do it poorly.
Oh no, I'm saying they do it poorly, but literally Uncharted, they spend the whole game trying to find out what the secret of this temple blah 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 is, and so they get there, and the secret of the temple is a zombie virus.
Yeah.
And then like that's what they did in Tomb Raider.
It was just, it felt like it was laying out so much foundation for future episodes, future installments, and you have, you know, with the Trinity Foundation. I mean, you didn't even need to go into all that in the first one. Let's just stick with her, stick with Lara, and then we'll move from there.
Yeah.
Well, and the thing, my favorite thing in the movie is, so these guys, they didn't want this queen to be found. So it's kind of weird that there's a way in at all. Like, I don't know why there are ways to get into the temple. When the whole point is they were burying this lady who had a zombie virus and they wanted her to stay gone.
Yeah.
But my favorite part is, so there's a bunch of things and there's a bunch of The Last Crusade traps. And then finally when you open up the thing, and on top of that, there is a tiny lever at the bottom that makes her sit up and scare people.
That's so ridiculous.
Like, what?
Come on.
I just love the idea of the architects. Like, well, we put in walls of spikes and collapsing floors and things. What if they make it all the way here? Well, then she'll sit up like a Halloween skeleton, and maybe that'll scare them to stay away from her. Like, at that point, guys, what are you doing?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's all underwhelming, but Walton Goggins. Also, Walton Goggins, who I love unreservedly. You're not as big a fan of Walton Goggins as I am. That's fine. You never watch Justified. I get it. Like, you don't have to watch, I mean, you should, but you don't have the time to watch Justified. I get that.
No, I do. I'm just not going to.
See, there you go. She just doesn't like having quality in her life. She doesn't like having quality in her life. It's fine.
That's not true.
It's 100% true if you're not watching Justified. But anyway, we can talk about Justified later. We won't talk about Justified later. Let's move on to the list. we're going to address.
Yeah. Okay. So this week's list is the 10 best female superhero movies.
Ooh.
So that's all 10 superhero movies?
Well, not even.
Oh no.
Oh, we're no.
Counting down from 10.
Okay.
Starting with Catwoman.
Okay, so yeah, that must be all of them if Catwoman yeah, has made a best say, wow. list.
I mean, I know you're really reaching if you put Catwoman on any list with the word best in the title, but...
Oh, God.
That's number nine.
Woman. Go.
Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Okay. I mean, the three of the four superheroes in that movie are women, so yeah, that's fine.
Three of the four?
Ghost and the Wasp and Janet Pym.
I wouldn't call Ghost a superhero.
Well, she's the powered lady. It's fine. It's close.
Well, because she's a villain, so.
Yeah, but then she turns good. Spoiler alert.
This issue of villains is going to come up next because number eight is Suicide Squad.
Yeah, she's not a superhero and she's not the lead.
Nope.
She's close to the lead, but she's not the lead.
She's not the lead. Also, okay, let me just read to you what this person wrote about it.
Yeah.
Okay, something blah, blah, blah. Suicide Squad. Harley Quinn first appeared in Batman, the animated series in 1992, stole the show with her expert gymnast moves and psychological tactics that easily made her a fan favorite. Psychological tactics?
What the hell does that mean?
What are you talking about?
No, she's just a crazy stalker. And that's fine. She's America's favorite crazy stalker, but that's all she is.
She's not a stalker, she's a mall.
Well, I think she is kind of a stalker of the Joker, but you're right, because there's an obsessiveness to the behavior that I think transcends Maldom.
But she's not a... I wouldn't call her a stalker. I don't think that's...
Given the amount of time she returns to the Joker after he throws her away?
Oh, that doesn't make her a stalker. That makes her an abused woman.
That's true. You're right. But yeah, she is not known for psychological tactics.
Yeah.
You know, master tactician Harley Quinn.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus.
The Art of War by Harley Quinn. Rule one. Hit people with a hammer. Oh, God. All right, next up.
Number seven, Powerpuff Girls, the movie.
I haven't seen this. I can't speak to it. But
I really like it. I think it's really cute.
That should have been higher on the list.
Yeah.
Powerpuff Girls are great. I just haven't seen the movie.
Oh, well, you should.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm not
definitely
surprised. All right.
Okay, number six, Supergirl.
That's a terrible movie. That is just a terrible movie.
Really, that was, yeah, that was on the ass end of the whole, like, Richard Donner.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
Oh, I'm embarrassed for that movie. And it's Faye Dunaway in that, right?
I don't know.
As the witch.
Yeah, she was. You're right. Yes.
I think it's Faye Dunaway as the witch. Oof. Yeah. Helen Slater's Supergirl. Just a disaster all around. Mm. Not a good movie. Peter O'Toole? Like, what was going on with that movie?
Paychecks.
Yeah, exactly. So many paychecks.
Yep.
Okay, next up.
Number five, Tank Girl.
Oh, I love Tank Girl.
Yeah, fun movie.
You're not going to hear me say anything bad about Tank Girl. Love the character, really enjoyed the movie. Lori Petty is
great. Yeah.
Perfect Tank Girl. Like, yeah, it's just a really good movie. Oh my God, I just realized that there's a slight chance that Barb Wire might show up on this list.
Wait. See.
Okay, next up.
If it goes ahead of Tank Girl, I'll be pissed.
No, that would be shattering.
Yeah.
Number four, Elektra.
Oh, that's a terrible movie.
Jesus Christ.
Do you know why is it number four? Do you know that only like three or four times in my entire life have I fallen asleep watching a movie I've never seen before? That just never happens to me. Like, if I sit down to watch a movie I haven't seen, I watch it all the way through. And like, very rarely will I fall asleep. I wasn't even that tired, and I dozed off during Elektra. It is so boring.
Yeah, that is like, that was like during her and Ben's like dual pact with Satan to do that in Daredevil.
Oh.
Simultaneously.
Oh, it's such a bad movie. Yeah, Elektra is not good.
Nope. Okay, number three. So it just says Jean Grey, X-Men The Last Stand. So we've just violated the rules of this list.
Yeah.
By listing a character instead of the movie. Never mind the fact that she's terrible.
It's
a terrible movie and she just sulks through the whole movie. Yep. It doesn't do anything.
Yeah. She's kind of, terrible in that awful film.
So are these aren't films that are just solely led by, they're just female superheroes.
Well, it was originally supposed to be solely led by, and then they threw that away immediately.
Right.
Like, it's clear that was the intention of the list, and then they're like, oh, there's only three of those, we'd better open up this list.
Right.
And that sucks.
Uh-huh. All right, we got two to go.
Okay, what's left?
Number two
is don't know what's left.
Captain Marvel, duh.
Oh, yeah, well, no, but I didn't realize this movie was from this week. Okay.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Number one is Wonder Woman.
Oh, okay, yeah, that makes perfect sense. Well, you know what? As long as Barb Wire isn't on the list, it's a good list.
I think Barb Wire deserves to be on this list more than Catwoman.
Ooh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sorry, I know, but really, if you wanted to extend the list, I was thinking about it, and I'm like, you know, there should have been a made-for-TV movie kind of subcategory. If you're going to go out and put Jean Grey in there, then why not do made-for-TV and do Lindsay Wagner as the Bionic Woman? I mean, come on, people.
Yeah,
talk about superpowers, and that
they
would... did.
They never actually released a theatrical one of those.
No, they didn't. But I'm just saying, if you're gonna stretch it to let Jean Grey, you know, spot on this list, then
maybe put one of the original superhero ladies,
exactly,
from filmed entertainment on there.
Yeah, you don't have to do Kathy Lee Crosby as Wonder Woman, but you know.
Oh my God! But yes, it's pretty. I gotta say, I've heard of worse ideas than that, but no, that was a pretty terrible list.
Yes,
it was a pretty terrible list that was more of an indictment of Hollywood sexism than it was the failure of the list makers.
Right,
because it's like these Marvel movies have been happening for a decade, and Scarlett Johansson still hasn't had her own movie.
Yep,
you know, and it might finally be happening, but it's been more than a decade. She was in Iron Man 2 in what, 2008 or something crazy like that, 2009. Mm. And they haven't given her her own movie in all that time, despite her showing up whenever they need her.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's been very good to you, Marvel.
But I think the issue now, though, is if you're going to make a Black Widow movie, what story do you tell? Because these movies are usually origin stories, and you can't tell her origin story because she's been around for too long.
Right.
In all of these other movies.
Yeah, you're
right. But if you don't do an origin story, it's going to be unsatisfying in a way that no one's really going to be able to describe sufficiently.
God, you're right. Cause it's not like now if Chris Evans wants to leave and they just do a Falcon and Winter Soldier movie, that's fine because we've been already slowly introduced to those characters. But it's like it would be a natural follow up to the Captain America franchise. I would watch Falcon and Winter Soldier, by the way. That sounds like a lot of fun. But how do you do just a Black Widow movie that isn't her origin story?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a really good question.
Yeah. Oof.
Well, you know what? I guess we're going to see what they have planned.
Especially after the criminally underrated Red Sparrow. I'll go on record saying that. I thought that was
a movie that nobody talked about. I'm like,
right?
It's just a good spy movie.
It really was. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people dismissed it for the wrong reasons.
Yeah. But yeah, anyway. It made no splash and it's very strange.
Yep.
All right. So let's move on to upcoming horror movies.
Yes. This week's upcoming horror movie is called Tone Deaf.
Oh, no.
And everybody needs to stop talking while I read the synopsis.
Please go.
No interruption.
All right.
After losing her job and imploding her latest dysfunctional relationship, Millennial Olive leaves the city for a weekend of peace in the country, only to discover the shockingly dark underbelly of rural America.
Ooh.
She rents an eccentric, ornate country house from Harvey, an old-fashioned widower who's struggling to hide his psychopathic tendencies. Soon, two generations collide with terrifying results in this home invasion horror film that is also darkly comedic. A critique of the bizarre cultural and political climate that currently exists.
Oh no!
Oh boy.
Oh no!
It gets worse.
Please.
This is written and directed by Richard Bates Jr.
Wait, why is that name familiar?
He made Trash Fire.
Oh my god! Oh,
one of the worst films I've seen.
No, that's a terrible movie.
Yeah.
Oh no, this is gonna be such garbage.
No pun intended.
An entitled millennial goes to, you know, goes to the old South and runs into a crazed serial killer.
Wait, wasn't the Trash Fire, wasn't that the one with the guy from Entourage in it? Am I thinking of the right one?
I don't know Entourage, but it's about this guy who goes home.
Adrian, what's his face?
Adrian. I think so, yeah.
I thought, oh,
you
good
know,
Lord.
From Marauders.
Yeah.
We watched Marauders on the show. It wasn't very good. Okay. But
sorry.
No, totally fine. You can jump in with that one. But yes, that is the movie you're thinking of, and it was complete garbage. Oh, I'm so sad now.
So I'm wondering if Tone Deaf will actually be Tone Deaf, probably.
It definitely will.
Titles.
Well, at least we have us coming in a couple weeks.
That's true. Something to look forward to.
That's going to be so much fun. Yeehaw. Yeah, that is the real upcoming horror movie. And by the way, I don't say a damn word about it. I've seen no posters. I have watched no trailers. I'm going in completely clean on this one.
Me too. I've just read headlines from South by Southwest that said
people
that he's avoided the sophomore slump altogether, and it is just as riveting, every bit as riveting, if not even scarier than
Get Out was.
Get Out. Wow. Yep.
Oh, I can't wait. I cannot wait for this movie.
I know.
All right. So we are here to talk about another movie, though, that we all watched.
Shazam! Oh, sorry.
I think I want to see that.
Me too. It's Shazam.
It kind of looks like fun.
I mean, Captain Marvel is one of my all-time favorite superheroes, so I just want to see what happens.
Yep.
I'm very excited to see it. And, so yeah, maybe we'll be back here talking about Shazam. Who knows? But yeah, we did not watch Shazam. Take it away, DM.
Veers is separated from her squad after an exfiltration mission goes wrong. She winds up on Earth, where she continues her pursuit of the bad guys and runs into Nick Fury. A bunch of stuff happens, then more stuff happens, and then, quite suddenly, she's a superhero. The end.
Okay, so before we start, can I just say that it has the single best opening crawl of any of the Marvel films with the Stan Lee tribute.
Oh, Stanley. Yeah, all of the Stan Lee cameos. God damn it.
Beautiful. Whoever
I would not be surprised. I would not be surprised if people teared up during that. It was so wonderful.
It really was perfect.
Yeah.
Totally did.
So beautiful.
No, and then they really had a movie, and then they had a movie after it.
And then there was we were also there for an hour and 40 minutes after the opening title card.
Oh boy.
All right, so. I'm just gonna jump out and say this. It is to me the least impressive Marvel movie since Doctor Strange, for me. Did I enjoy sitting in a theater watching this movie? Yeah, I did. Yep. But I also enjoyed sitting in a theater watching Doctor Strange. The minute to minute, these guys make like movies that are entertaining to watch. I think it had a lot of problems though, and I think it's their weakest movie since Doctor Strange, and I would put it down there with Iron Man 2 and like Thor 2 kind of territory.
Okay. I loved Doctor Strange. That is.
I know you did. We've previously disagreed on Doctor Strange.
I kind of enjoy Iron Man 2. I despise Iron Man 3. I'd say this is better than that.
See, and I'd flip you on that one. Again, those are the two we really disagree on. I love Iron Man 3, you like Iron Man 2, but I'd say we both put them roughly in the same place in the Marvel Pantheon, swapped. And I would say, yeah, it's, for me, it's better than Iron Man 2, for you, it's better than Iron Man 3.
Yeah.
Okay. I would put it roughly there. Rob?
So I would say that let's say if Captain America Civil War was like their 70s spy thriller, Spider-Man Homecoming was kind of their ode to John Hughes films. Yeah. This would be their 90s sitcom Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Kind
of. Ouch.
Shots Full House, out. Maybe.
Not even though, because where Captain America was able, mind you, it's contemporary, but able to leverage that sort of the 70s spy thriller
vibe.
Aesthetic vibe. Captain Marvel really didn't capitalize on the 90s. They didn't leverage that at all.
Oh, I thought the effects looked like they were right out of the 90s.
Oh, God! That's so mean.
Oh, I just went for that.
Yeah, that was a beautiful setup. Couldn't have worked better if it had been planned.
Thank you. That was a good hit.
I see that, though.
No, Cal, I'm with you 100%. Like, yes, I had fun while I was there. I so wanted to be moved by this movie. I so wanted to walk away thinking, oh my gosh, this is it. Now the flag has been planted and we're getting ready to move forward. And I just walked away with just such, I mean, it almost left my mind the minute I left the theater.
Yeah.
There's nothing to hold on to in this
so
movie.
So lightweight and just, yeah, there was just so many little problematic things. And honestly, some of the worst writing that I've seen in a Marvel film in quite some time, honestly. Oh,
yeah. That's absolutely right. Not only do, and weird stuff too, like missing jokes that don't work, really flat characters. Like there's a moment in the movie where it's like, I don't know how you missed this joke. And I mean, obviously we're going to talk about the whole movie. So they're escaping from, Area 51. I don't remember what they called their fake Area 51.
It doesn't matter.
Pegasus or something. Pegasus doesn't matter what it was called. But anyway, they're leaving their fake Area 51. And she's like, we have to go to Louisiana. Where's Louisiana? Fly straight east until Memphis and take a right. And she does not immediately say, I don't know what either of those things are. Because how could she? She doesn't know what either of those things are. She doesn't know what East is. She doesn't know what Memphis is. Like, how do you miss that joke?
Well, and there's countless aspects of that. And I guess we'll get into it as we progress. But I do feel like just like that missing a joke, it felt like they were so quick to move to the next scene that nothing set in. Like I never got the sense that I still don't get the sense that she is indestructible. She's got nuclear hands and that's essentially all I got out of it is that, you know, she's got rocket hands and really I don't have any sense of her humanity, her struggle to get there and the fact that she is completely and utterly indestructible. So there was no sense of peril ever felt. There was no sense of, you know, that there was going to be any jeopardy had by any of the characters in there because we never got to spend really any quality time getting to know any of them. They just got to have like, you know, witty repartee between a couple of them. And
I don't understand. Okay. And here's the thing about the movie, right? I don't understand in order to earn the moment where she gets God powers and wrecks everything. You have to have her get really beaten in a series of fights.
Yep.
For that to be satisfying. But that never happens.
No. Well,
because this story, like as much, like it's supposed to be about her and it's her origin story and it should be like a journey of self-discovery for her and for us.
Yep.
But it isn't. It's almost like the movie kind of takes for granted that everybody knows that she's a superhero, that she is Captain Marvel. So. Yeah.
So there was this definitive moment that it really kind of encapsulated it for me is that they had that one montage scene that felt like it was a Nike commercial where it showed her repeatedly. Repeatedly getting back up.
Oh,
and I felt like Serena Williams was going to narrate it for us.
No, you're right that felt I have seen that exact Nike commercial.
Yeah.
Like that's not hyperbole.
But we don't know what she's getting up from. And I think therein lies my really like kind of fundamental issue with it. Is it like, yeah, she's getting back up, but she's got, we don't know. I mean, we see her just getting up. That's it. There's no contextualization of anything. It's just this montage.
Well, this is the other issue in terms of like, they don't know how to tell her story properly because like, she's getting, like, she crashed her go-kart, she fell off her bike, I don't know, she, like, can't hit a baseball.
Hit a baseball.
Much earlier in the film, it's mentioned that her dad's an asshole. Yeah. And you see him yelling at her at some point. And so, the getting back up should be about her standing up to her dad.
Exactly.
Which is why she stands up to Jude Law.
Yes.
But, in the context of the visuals that are presented to us, it's just, no, she fell off her bike and she's going to get back up and try again. And good for her.
Right.
No, but it's like you needed this story about what an abusive, like they're not willing to go all the way in with what an abusive monster her dad had to be that she had to go and live essentially with a foster family. You know?
Right. And then, and that would provide context for her weird relationship with Jude Law, who turns out to be the bad guy. Big surprise there. Jude Law can't be trusted. So
not only can Jude Law not be trusted, I like, it's a surprise that he's the bad guy. You know he's on the same side as that guy who likes to blow up planets, right?
Remember the guy
who blows up planets from Guardians of the Galaxy?
As soon as he's like Skype texting with a guy holding a 500-pound anvil in his hand just to have you kind of get the feeling like, wonder why he's got a hammer just for a casual conversation. You know, it's like,
but it's like there's an entire movie about how Lee Pace loves to blow up planets and how Jaimin Honshu is a crazy murderer who works for him. And then we see that these are the two co-workers of Jude Law.
Yes.
I wonder who the bad guy is. Like, guys, come on. You can't play it like this is a surprise. You have to lean into the fact that the audience has seen all of these movies and remembers Lee Pace and Jaimin Honshu.
Worse yet, Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers, doesn't recover her memories on her own.
Yes.
Yep. So when the double cross inevitably comes, and it happens too late.
Yep.
It's handed to her by the guy who's supposed to be the bad guy.
Literally, she doesn't get betrayed. Like, there should be a scene where she is massively damaged by being betrayed by Jude Law. But the film's ostensible bad guy walks in, tells her that Jude Law is the bad guy. She gets all of her memories back. And so then it's a complete anticlimax when she runs into Jude Law later.
And he even says, and here's another aspect, he even has that one line, look, I even have blood on my hands from this. Well, we never see her with blood on her hands. She's too busy firing rockets from them. So we don't literally see any kind of consequence to her. You know what I mean?
It's like you get this moment where, who is the actor who plays the...
Ben Mendelsohn.
Ben Mendelsohn, who I like normally.
Love him.
I mean, then again, he was in Ready Player One, but it's like, essentially, in that scene, he's supposed to be saying, I forgive you for all the ethnic cleansing.
Yeah.
Now please help me deal with this situation. But I'm like, the film is unwilling to grapple with the fact that she was a frigging ethnic cleanser.
Yeah.
That she has killed thousands of Skrulls.
Cause that would make her the bad guy.
But it has to be a film about her stopping being a bad guy and finding out that like this evil empire turned her into a living weapon and brainwashed her against her will, and her being manipulated her whole life, just like she was by her dad, just like she was by the U.S. Army, blah, 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 blah. Like that should have been her arc.
Yeah, so, but finally rejecting as I said, all of because that. She never comes by the stuff on her own. You can't have that story. So that's the problem with Kat. So like the whole time she's on Earth, it should jog her memory. She should realize that her memories are being repressed. They've even been overwritten in some cases.
Yep.
But then, the whole time on Earth, she's just palling around with Nick Fury.
And trading quips and listening to 90s one-hit wonders.
Yes, exactly.
And you don't even, and the crazy part is, this isn't even hard. You do a scene where Ben Mendelsohn looks like he's going to kill her, but then instead he offers her a hand. She beats him up and throws him away. She goes to report to Jude Law, and then Jude Law tries to kill her. There. That's how you structure that.
But even Ben Mendelsohn's character, and I hope we're going to get into the Skrulls in just a second, but Ben Mendelsohn's character does a complete 180. I mean, he goes from being this, like, cackling this heartless monster? Bastard of saying, shoot him, find him, kill him. And then all of a sudden he's like, look, I need to rub temples with my Skrull wife, you know, in outer space and wear flannel and have dinner and joke with you as though we were having friends over for dinner. Oh, you know, I mean, it was just a complete and utter character shift that felt unearned.
Oh, completely unearned. Also, he says jazz hands, and I'm like, you're a Skrull!
So yes, let's get to that, please. Because you alluded to it too about being like West and Wisconsin and all that. And there's a moment too where the Skrulls, they finally reveal themselves to Carol and I forget her fellow Air Force pilot. Maria.
Yeah.
And they all of a sudden pop into Maria's house and one of them comes in sipping a straw from, I guess, a Chick-fil-A cup or something
milkshake from Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, he was able to stop by and grab like, you know, a milkshake, even just being nanoseconds on this planet and then says, you should, you know, what if your neighbor wants to borrow a cup of sugar? Like, this is an old school idiom.
Why would
idiom.
You know something like that? Yeah.
Like and an old school is, idiom that we honestly, don't even use anymore. Like,
I thought that character was going to have been, I know this is going to sound crazy, I was expecting him to actually be Nick Fury's boss, and then Nick Fury's boss this whole time had been a Skrull.
Right.
But no.
You're thinking way too hard.
But no, this is his, he's been in this planet for 8 seconds, and he's just the most
And he knows where to get fast food, and he knows idioms from the 1960s and 50s.
It's insane.
Yeah, it just.
Well, right up there with how do people know these things when, what's his face? Ben Mendelsohn?
Mendelsohn. Talon in the movie.
Gives her the CD with the black box recording. It's like, where did he get that?
Yeah, I don't know.
Why does he have it on CD? Yeah. Like, I get it's for the joke where we're waiting for it to load.
Yeah.
But at the same time,
how did he get that?
Right.
How did he get it?
I guess he got it from, I assume he got it from the like Area 51, but why is it on CD? Why is he bringing it this way? If he wants her help, why is he being such a dick all of that time?
When did he get it? Like it doesn't, none of...
I guess he got it at Area 51 just then, but they don't explain it.
But how would he even know that that's important?
And that would be what convinced her and jogged her memories. Like, it comes
completely
out of nowhere.
All that was a setup for a 90s joke. That's all it was. And that's what a lot of these seem like they were just to set up a joke. And it even, most of it worked toward the detriment of its characters. And there's this one setup where they're both saying, both the pilots, both Carol and Maria were saying, oh, well, it's all it is da 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 and G-force and so on and so forth. It's simple physics. Don't you know that? And I'm like, I didn't know that she knew all that. I didn't know she was that brilliant. I didn't know she was that. I mean, I know she had a really cool wrist thingy that translated shit, but I also know just a few seconds earlier, she was blasting a cardboard cutout of Arnold Schwarzenegger in a blockbuster because she couldn't distinguish it from an actual life form. You know, I mean, like, how do I know that she has these powers? They never give us any clue to that whatsoever.
Yeah,
because suddenly she's able to look at a string of numbers and say, oh, well, that's obviously the speed and course of an object orbiting the Earth. Obviously. Yeah. I'm like, you're a test pilot. Why would you immediately have that information?
Yeah.
You didn't work for NASA.
Oh, my goodness. So, okay.
It was weird.
Can we also address the now that's what I call the 90s soundtrack in here for a second.
Sure.
Okay. I am one of the moments that I was completely taken out of this film too was, and this is in by no means a knock to the illustrious work of Gwen Stefani and No Doubt.
Yeah.
But playing I'm Just a Girl during the climactic, one of her climactic battle sequences.
Removes all of the tension and drama.
Removes all the tension. And I actually did a search for, you know, the 1995, which I think it was, that was supposed to be set in, correct?
Yeah, set in 1995.
Okay. So I was looking at 1994, 1995's female driven songs because, you know, look.
What could they have used?
So how about you could do PJ, you could do anything for PJ Harvey, but yeah. Fiona Apple's Criminal, Alanis
would have been good.
Alanis Morissette. I mean, come on. Bjork, anything from Bjork.
Garbage.
Garbage, Only Happy When It Rains.
Yeah.
They already used that, but you're right. They could have used it, you know.
Reused it there. Or Veruca Salt Seether. Mm-hmm. Come on. I mean,
there are better songs that, cause like, it's the wrong tone. It's the wrong song. You look at how brilliantly Led Zeppelin is used in Thor Ragnarok.
Yes, exactly.
They could have picked a song to be her theme.
Yep.
Yeah.
And this wasn't the song.
Worse,
and it
yet.
Wasn't set up through the whole movie.
Worse
to be her
yet.
Theme.
To, yeah. On the topic of the music. Okay. So not only is it not.
Oh, by the way, I just want to say, if you wanted a song to be her theme, make it a song from the 80s. She's from the 80s.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Exactly.
The character is from the 80s. She has no connection to the 1990s.
Yeah.
Even though the film is set there. Sorry, that really bothered me.
No, but on the topic of the music, so, okay, pick a better song for her fight with Jude Law, but also, there is a jukebox on board that spaceship.
God. Yeah.
Why couldn't the song start diegetic and become non-diegetic over the course of the fight? That's what we want. That's why the jukebox is there. Same thing when she goes into that dive bar.
And blast.
Also, it would have been had that happened, it would have necessarily been a song from the 80s because that's when the spaceship went up there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then on the topic of her having a theme, so not only, you know, they don't leverage the 90s or 80s music well enough.
Yeah.
There is no theme or leitmotif throughout this entire movie. The only recognizable music is the Avengers theme at the very end.
Yep.
And I think that's a big problem for this movie.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. Yeah. Half of them were set up, but half of the quote unquote humor in it was a setup for bad puns of look how lame we were in the 90s with our slow moving computers, our pagers, which were state of the art at the time, or that,
and
you
our
know,
9-inch nails t-shirts.
Our 9-inch nails t-shirts or our flannel shirts that tied around our waist.
I mean, oh yes, grunge.
Yes, yes.
Oh.
Yeah, that thing says loose flannel. How does she know what that is?
Yeah.
It's a good question.
Actually, no, but she doesn't remember anything at that point, so no, she can't know.
No, she should not know what the flannel is.
Right.
And the Skrulls themselves, I mean, honestly, with all the de-aging that they were able to, I think successfully give Samuel Jackson this.
It looked amazing. Like, he's just, amazing. I mean, yeah, he has the wideness of face that actual 90s Samuel Jackson didn't have.
Totally.
He's completely young. Like the euthanizing him is fantastic.
Wow, that sounded strange.
It does, doesn't it? That's not the word I was looking for. But anyway.
But really, they couldn't have afforded like some sort of Skrull makeup that wouldn't give them all like lisps when they talked. I don't know if you've noticed that when Ben Mendelsohn, when he spoke with his Skrull makeup on, it had this talk where he sounded like he didn't have teeth.
Yeah.
And all these like Nosferatu looking creatures, they couldn't, their lips didn't move normally. I mean, it looked like they were out of a really bad 90s, like full head mask.
You're trying to say is they looked like characters from Babylon 5.
Yeah.
And
They looked like a Star Trek episode. They really did.
They really did. Like I can't disagree with that at all. It's frustrating. That's like, this movie costs $250 million to make. Why does this look so bad?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even the, you know, like we said before with all the special effects, I mean, when she ultimately takes flight, it looked, I mean, we all knocked Black Panther's CGI when they went to battle there.
That fight scene. Ugh.
Yeah. But this made that look, I mean, it looked like looked great by comparison. I mean, this looked like Sci-Fi Channel. Yeah. Actual CGI in it at some points. I mean, it was just really, really poor.
especially, and what was the other thing that really got me in the effects? Oh, no, just the, just when everything was exploding, I'm like, and she's flying through and the missile exploding, I'm like, oh, this has looked so much better in other Marvel movies.
Right. Yep.
Oh, yeah, no, so much of the effects were so weak. Also, I know this is a weird thing to point out, but, so their plan, the plan of the Skrulls is team up with Annette Bening, right, to get the energy necessary to flee to another galaxy where they won't be followed by the Kree. That is their plan. That is what they want.
Why not just steal a Kree ship? Because they clearly have
capacity to travel
faster than light.
Right.
What bothers me is they call this the light speed drive. And I'm like, oh, a light speed drive. So you're saying it'll only take you 800 years to get to the next galaxy? Do you know how far away the next galaxy is?
Yeah.
And more to the point, all the aliens in this universe all have jump drives, which are better than light speed drives.
Yeah, so why not just, that's what I'm saying. Steal a ship with a jump drive.
Yeah.
I know they meant that the speed, like, I assume jump drives need nodes to function and you can't just go to another galaxy if there's not nodes there. I guess. The film definitely doesn't say that, but we can assume.
Again, you're working too hard.
Oh no, I am. But they absolutely need something faster than light speed drive if they want to get to another. And the weird part is like, and I'm sure they meant it was something faster than light speed drive, but give it a different name then.
Yeah.
Cause light speed is not that fast when you're talking about interstellar spaces.
But at the same time though, he's just saying, well, I need to find Annette Bening because she's working on a light speed drive, but that's actually not what he's looking for at all. He's trying to find his family. It's like, okay.
Well, it is both.
It's a good line to feed to an earthling who doesn't know anything.
Who doesn't even know Earth at this point.
Yeah, that's true.
But you're talking to someone who has lived, for all she knows, all of her life on a planet that has technology. Yeah.
Super tech.
Yeah.
At that point,
crazy super tech.
Yeah, you could say dial-up modem and that would sound like, oh my goodness, that's important. You know, they wouldn't know any better. Like,
you're right. In 1996, if she were a human, light speed drive would sound fantastical.
Right.
To Vierce, no, that's nothing. You're asking her for nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So literally, like, escape pod that Jude Law gets in has the ability to jump between solar systems.
Right?
So the idea that this light speed drive is something special is crazy. Ugh.
Yeah, so it's just like, so who, when he says stuff like that, who is he talking to? Is he talking to today's audience? Is he talking to an audience from 1995? Or is he talking to an Earth person in the movie from the past?
That's a good question.
Yeah, and again, I don't think it's one that the writers ever even
bothered.
set out to answer. I mean, they were too busy with Family Guy type quips of like, look how lame we were. Look what, you know.
Didn't the 90s suck?
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly. I think that's exactly what they were. They wanted to set it up for the next 90s era gag and then move on to the next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That you're right. That was their only priority ever. Like,
yeah.
And here, okay, now I'm going to say the thing that I think we're all feeling. I can't say for you guys for sure. For a wonderful actress, I can't believe how bad Brie Larson was in this movie.
She's pretty flat.
She's so flat. She is a charisma vacuum. She is lifeless in this movie. And I'm like, she's so good in so many things. How is she so bad in this?
She's nothing to work with.
She was undercut in every scene almost.
She is. Absolutely. But it's like, then insist that your character, but even when she's required to be quippy, like, there's this lack of energy to her quips.
Yeah.
Like, there's just, and like, everyone keeps talking, like, Jude Law keeps talking about her, and the intelligence, she's so emotional, she gotta learn to control herself. She is not emotional. Every other character in the movie is more emotional than her.
Yeah.
the Arnold Schwarzenegger standee she shoots is more emotional than her. Because at least he's smirking. Like, no, she is not emotional. What are you saying? That is not accurate to this character at all. Like, I can't tell you anything about her.
Well, she and seems I think like I feel like I feel as though there was much more that she could have brought to it, but unfortunately, she was given so little to work with that she essentially was just had to appear kind of like indifferent in every scene because she really didn't know what she was supposed to feel from one moment to the next because we were. Every time you even started to develop a particular scene, it would jump to something else and move forward. And, you know, emotions be damned. We've got to keep this train rolling on its tracks.
Like, this is a character whose life has been stolen from her.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh yeah. But yeah.
We never emotionally connect with the life she used to have. Even in these many, many scenes with her best friend and her best friend's daughter, we never really get to connect with that life and who she was. So, and she never seems like she was betrayed.
Yeah. Well, like, because the movie actually isn't about her. It's about stuff happening around her and to her.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
It's not her story.
Which is crazy. Yeah. She's the title character.
Yeah.
She's the first person we meet in the first scene. Like, how is this not her story? But it's really not. Like, think about what Captain America goes through in Winter Soldier just from it losing, like, he's still the same guy, but he's lost 70 years. Like, think of what that character goes through emotionally in that movie. And that's a taut action thriller, and they still find room for him to go through some incredible character things. This movie is just an origin story, but it doesn't have any time for any character stuff with her.
Yeah, because, like, it's, to say the movie's padded, I don't think it's fair. It's just, the story doesn't develop where it should, when it should, and how it should.
That's right.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, you're absolutely right. And it's just, it's so frustrating. They have such talented actors. They have all of the money, you know, every bit of money you could possibly spend on a movie. They have everything they could possibly ask for, but oh, the script was not ready to go.
Yeah. Not at all.
Not ready to go.
Not in the least.
But I want to move off that now and ask a question. Where does this cat come from and why is it there?
Don't know. It's super cute though. The really cute cat.
No. Great cat, love it, but what's the deal with the cat?
Well, I mean, it's Annette Bening's pet, and
no, it's just, it's a punchline, it's there as a joke, like everything else in this movie.
All the way to the end credits.
Oh yeah.
Yes. Hey, was there a final end credit post credits, or, cause I didn't stay.
Yes. Oh, you should have stayed. It wasn't worth it, but you should have stayed.
No, but it's like,
the family in front of me stayed, and the kid's like, really? That's it?
What was it?
It's the cat. Coughs up the Tesseract.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, that logically makes sense that's what it was.
And actually, I gotta say, that was probably some of the best CGI applied in the movie. Because it went from a live cat to a cat that actually, you know, physically, like, dislodged its jaws to barf up the Tesseract.
Yeah, that looks pretty good, so.
It did.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, there you go. And it's like, I was so disappointed when, like, they have the cat. Oh, what's the cat going to do? Oh, it's got a crazy, the thing face. Great. Fine. But then they're like, oh, we're cornered by bad guys. We're going to do. Hey, remember that scene where Groot just casually murders a bunch of guys?
Yeah.
Yes.
As a comedy joke? Let's do that exact same shot, but with the cat. I'm like, really? The exact same shot?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on, guys. Do your own thing. Figure out your own movie. But yeah, no, you're right. The cat is once again just a device. Mm-hmm. It's super cute though. It's a super cute cat.
Super cute. And I guess that was one. So like everything about this movie is just a punchline about the 90s. The cat is named Goose. No one ever comments on it.
And they're in the Air Force. And
they just let that one go.
Yeah. Totally.
Jesus.
Yeah.
It is weird that it's like, it's an entirely 90s focused thing, but Annette Bening, cause she's from the 80s, has a cat named Goose, and that goes completely unacknowledged. You're right, it goes completely unacknowledged by the film.
And I think most people in the audience didn't get it.
No, definitely. I would say 90% of the people in the audience did not get that reference.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially cause like, at one point she's playing to eject, I'm like, like Goose, remember? No, okay. I guess it's not a thing. Oh, God, it's so frustrating.
Yeah.
And I mean, it is. It's frustrating. It's a film that could have been so much more.
So, does Nick Fury's mangled eye is supposed to have some kind of power now? Because the way Ben Mendelsohn reacted after he got scratched by that cat.
That is 100% what they're saying. Yes.
There's something going on with that eye.
Without hesitation, they are saying that there's something going on with his eye wound now.
Okay.
Yeah. And by the way, how ridiculous is it that they kept it? This film turned into Hot Tub Time Machine. Cause I don't know how well you remember Hot Tub Time Machine, but when they go to the place, when they go to the resort, Crispin Glover is there and he's missing an arm, and they find out he lost the arm the weekend they're going back to. And so the whole movie, they spend the whole time being like, is this when he's going to lose his arm? Damn it, no. Yeah. Is this when he's going to, no, damn it, no. They did that with Nick Fury's eye in this movie.
That's like, right.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
They're seriously hot tub time machining Nick Fury's eye.
Yep.
That's crazy. I don't like, they have so many good writers working at Marvel. Who wrote this?
Well, the B team, I guess.
Oh.
There was like six credited writers too, but the same two who directed also serve as writers for it too, so.
Playing credit, yeah.
But it did seem like they were kind of all fighting each other for a tone for this movie.
Oh,
you know,
completely.
Because it would shift from one to the next depending upon the scene.
Yeah.
It's an infuriating film, and I I want to stress, I had a good time watching it, but.
It disappears
from your head. It disappears from your head the moment it's over.
I'm not sure I'm gonna watch it again.
I don't know if I can see myself ever seeing this again.
No.
Like, do you know how many times I've watched Thor 3?
Sure.
It's such a good movie.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Oh.
And I will never forgive, and this is the kind of thing that, that they should have fixed for the DVD. After you spent an entire movie establishing Immigrant Song Led Zeppelin as Thor's theme song, how on earth, in the moment in Avengers Endgame, when he flies out of the sky, attacking with his new axe, does that not start playing?
It's just a refrain from it, anything.
Just
no,
just start the riff. Start the riff as he's coming in.
Yep.
Like, that's all, and then the scream, and then he hits, and then he hit, and then he slams the axe into it, I want to say, oh, this is embarrassing. Thanos. And he slams the axe into Thanos and it's like, that's your punchline. That's what we've been waiting. We've been waiting the whole movie for Thor to be Thor again.
But Endgame wants to be and succeeds at being unrelentingly depressing. And that song would have lightened the mood.
I know. Right?
Way too much.
It would have cheered us all up. And the film can't risk doing that.
No.
Under no circumstances. Can they risk cheering us up? Okay. But the thing is, you say that, but how disheartening would it be if you have this beautiful lightning hero moment, lightning the tone, hero moment from Thor comes in, cuts him almost in two with the axe, and they still don't win.
So since we're on the Marvel's universe aspect of it, I was looking for connective tissue outside of just the Tesseract being hacked up. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, or did anyone else notice that the Skrulls' chins looked
like Thanos?
Way similar to Thanos's. I mean, they had that same kind of like, the
ridges. They had the
whale like, yes, exactly. They almost look like a baleen whale kind of.
Yeah, I think that's just lazy creature design.
Okay. It's lazy creature design from the 60s and the 70s.
I didn't know if there was any sort
He is not a Skrull. No.
No, not that he was a Skrull, but that there was something, I didn't know if there was any kind of you know, connection. Guardians of the Galaxy kind of connection there, but, no. But maybe that was just me hoping too much that they were, that they put too much thought into it, but what no. am I thinking?
No, they're just going with the original, they're going with the original character design. Fun fact, in, what do you call it? The Ultimates, the really terrible comic that inspired them to bring Nick Fury on as, Samuel Jackson on as Nick Fury. Right. They thought the Skrull design was a little on the goofy side, so they redesigned them for that. And partially the redesign of that is what became the bad guys from the first Avengers movie.
Okay.
The Chitauri.
Oh, so okay.
There you go. Yeah. But they still have Skrulls, and the Skrulls are the old goofy looking Skrulls.
Yeah. they just look like Nosferatu. Relative.
These look so much like Nosferatus.
Yes, exactly. Like, little baby Nosferatu. That's why I was like, oh my god, he's gonna bite your neck, child. Stay away.
Why are you being so kind to this vampire?
Yes.
What is wrong
yes.
with you? So yeah, I think we can agree that it was a problematic film.
Yeah.
I have a question.
Go.
On the topic of being problematic.
Yes.
So, Lee Pace says they're gonna come back to Earth for the woman.
Yeah.
So he's going to come back to Earth for Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
But he dies or is destroyed, whatever you want to say, before she comes back to Earth. Because we have to assume that she's been away from Earth.
This whole time.
Yeah.
Yes.
But so what the hell was that all about?
I assume Lee Pace will feature in Captain Marvel 2.
But is she back on Earth in Captain Marvel 2? Has he found her
Captain
elsewhere?
Marvel 2, I think Captain Marvel 2 is going to take place in space. She wants to go to war with the Kree Empire. He's the guy who blows up planets for the Kree. I have to assume he will feature in Captain Marvel 2.
That's what they wanted to set up.
But they set it up in the worst possible
Guardians of the Galaxy, so why wouldn't she be able to defeat him in Captain Marvel 2? Because that would have to take place before Guardians.
It would. And I'm not saying he won't get defeated again in Captain Marvel 2. If anything, they've done with this is, really undermine. I mean, since Lee Pace is already dead in the modern verse, I think they had no problem undermining him in this movie. Cause why not? The character's already dead. So I don't think he's going to be the main enemy in, Captain Marvel 2. I just think he'll be in Captain Marvel 2. Cause she's going to be fighting the Kree in Captain Marvel 2.
Well, that's what he is.
Yeah, and he's a Kree. That's what I'm saying. That's why I'm sure he's going to be back, but I don't think he's going to be the main threat. I have no idea what the main threat is. He's already kind of in charge
in this one. He's the one sending out the Star Force to murder everybody.
Yeah, he's the one blowing up planets. Yeah, like.
So again, like what they're setting up, I don't think is possible.
Yeah, you make a strong point.
Yeah. But even her return at the post-credit sequence, I mean, maybe she got a hold of Samuel Jackson's de-ageifier, but she doesn't look like she's been gone for 20 some odd years?
Yeah, she hasn't aged a day because she's got superpowers now.
Right. I forgot that was one of the superpowers that was never told to us.
To quote Alan Moore, as I always do, so ill-defined as to be nearly limitless.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Nuclear hands and fountain
Light,
of youth. Got it.
Invulnerability, fountain of youth.
Right. Okay.
Those are her powers. Check. Those are her only powers. Wink. She's gonna have whatever powers the script requires her to have.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. A mixed bag all in all, I would say.
Yeah.
And that's me being kind. And we're
lower
getting the finger
end,
from
lower end
somebody
of
in the
Marvel spectrum.
No, absolutely. Yes. I think we can all agree on that
one. A real disappointment because the trailer set up a great story.
Yeah.
This is why I don't watch trailers. I don't want to get my hopes up. Oh, so disappointing. All right. So, next up is going to be Avengers Endgame. So she's going to be back for that. Hopefully she will be used better there than here because the Russo brothers know what they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is my hope. I hope that because the Russo brothers know what they're doing, she will be better used there than she was here in her own origin story.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Oh, God. And the thing is, it's like, remember when, how do you not understand that you gotta give, you gotta, if you want Jude Law to be the bad guy, you gotta give him something to do. He disappears from the movie, and then he's just on the telephone for 80% of this movie.
Yeah.
Like, as many problems as I have with, you know, as many problems as I have with, what do you call it, the first Captain America movie, Red Skull's out there doing stuff. When Jeff Bridges turns his evil, he's doing stuff the whole movie. He's in the whole movie.
He's just playing catch up.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to take him 20 hours to get to Earth, so what else is he going to do except talk on the phone?
Okay, one thing I really did like, and this is genuinely no questionable liking. So Agent Coulson and Nick Fury are in a car driving around, and I'm like, wow, Clark Gregg is playing this really restrained. I wonder if he's saying that back then Coulson was a bit of a stiff and not the goofy character we know him as. And then they're like, oh, it's a Skrull. He was choosing to play it very stiff.
Right.
Because that was his little tip off that this wasn't actually Agent Coulson. I really liked that. I thought that was very good that, you know, this actor made this choice to play the Skrull version of him distinctly different than the regular version of him. So the audience could clue in.
I was just so creeped out by his de-aging.
Exactly, thank you.
They spent all of the money. They spent all of the money.
Wow. Nick Fury's de-aging. Like, how could
and then Clark Gregg is like, it was plasticine on his face.
Like Madame Truffaut's, like, Truffaut's.
Okay, Clark, stand over here. We're going to spray some liquid wax in your face. Get out there.
Exactly.
God.
We're going to really darken your eyebrows.
Put on this wig. You're golden.
Golden brown. Right. Yeah.
So that was that.
I'm right there with the DM. I felt the same thing. I just could not get my eyes off that. I'm like,
it's crazy. No, it's crazy. It does not look good at all. All right. So that is going to be a perfect place to stop on this. Final Judgment, it's like the second most successful Marvel opening weekend ever. So more power to you guys. It's one of your weaker films, but you made all the money. So we're just yelling into the void at this point.
Yep.
Yeah.
Everyone saw this movie. And it's not like I'm trying to discourage people from seeing it, but everybody already did. So you would be a fool to try. And even though it wasn't a good movie, I'm glad that assholes on the internet had their feelings hurt by doing well.
Yes.
That's what I loved. I mean, even if it's not great, assholes on the internet got their feelings hurt. Boom. That's a win for humanity, everybody.
No doubt. No doubt.
So yeah. So that at least felt good.
But I never thought I'd be here saying that DC's Wonder Woman was a better film than this.
I know, right?
You know, 5 years ago, there's no way I would have ever predicted that, but.
It's a shocker.
Yeah.
But here we are. All right. So let's move on to Narcissism Watch.
Woohoo.
Rob, go.
Yes, sir. So, we are, as part of the Revival House, it's a monthly film event that I have in Milton, Delaware here in the States. We are having a return screening of the Tommy Wiseau classic, The Room, as if there's any other, as if he has a like wide oeuvre
of his many films.
His canon of films. But I did see a trailer for Big Shark, I think it's called.
Yeah,
whatever the hell that thing is called. Okay. And he has Best Fiends. So you know, that was actually other movies.
That yeah, it was Greg
Sestero's project.
Yeah. But anyway, yes, we are going to show The Room in all of its glory with plastic spoons handed out to everybody to participate. It was a wonderful event last year, almost sold out, and we're looking forward to a return visit to The Room.
Yay. That sounds quite exciting.
Yes.
And anyone who hasn't seen The Room, first off, how are you living in this day and age?
It's free on YouTube now, for Christ's sake.
That's crazy. You can just go watch it right now.
But
see The Room
with the crowd.
You will understand so much. But if you have the chance to see it with the crowd, like in this Delaware situation, you owe it to yourself to see it with the crowd. Because it is a great ride.
Yes.
It is a great ride with a crowd. Okay, for me, you know, constant new flood of content at Hidden Object Guru Channel. My new, the first fully ethical video game review channel, Totally Objective Reviews, is going like gangbusters.
Right on.
I know. At least three people have figured out that it's a joke. So, wow. Most people don't know what the hell it is, but like three people get that it's a joke. So I'm pretty proud of that. Seriously though, so check, those out. DM?
Yeah, I guess True North Crime and Chicks and Dicks for all your true crime and romance needs. Those do not intersect.
I hope.
Yet.
Oh, yes. And of course, Profiling Criminal Minds is going to be on iTunes soon. So go
soon.
Check
as
that
soon
out
as
there. Vote for
I make
things.
You some new cover art because yes. I am not uploading that.
You are not comfortable associating your brand with my cover art, which is fine.
You got your brand and my cover art. No, you got your...
which I completely agree with you on. I'm a garbage person for using that cover art for so long. Totally agree with that. But anyway, as always, Rob, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. I'm going to go back to my Zima and Tamagotchis now.
How was there no reference to Zima in this movie?
Right?
How did he not walk into that Louisiana home drinking a Zima? And what are you doing, movie?
Kid didn't even have a fucking Furby in sight either, damn right. The hell.
Where was her Furby? Yeah. Why didn't they put a secret message inside the Furby? We're doing the work for you, movie.
Jesus Christ.
This ain't that complicated. All right. So anyway, as always, I want to thank, oh right, is there any other way to get in touch with us?
Oh yes, I suppose so. You can visit the AVOD's blog at theavod.com. If you're listening to us on iTunes, do visit the blog because there are about 300 other episodes you can listen to online.
That are not listed on, iTunes yet.
Yeah.
Maybe
or
ever.
Probably ever. You can send us an email at theavod@gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
And I encourage you to do all of those things. So until next time, I've been Count Vargelon.
I've been DM.
And Shazam! Nope. Still not working.
Still not working. Damn it.
I'm still Rob, damn it.
Keep trying.
Oh, well. I tried.
Thanks for watching and have yourselves a great evening.
Good night.
Bye.